Georgia Supreme Court Leo Frank Appeals Documents, 1913-1914, page 1266, slide. Visible translated text is as follows, 224 in there. I don't remember who called her Mary Fagan. A young man on the fourth floor told me her name was Mary Fagan. I don't know who he was. I didn't know anybody in the factory. I can't describe any of the girls. I don't know a single one in the factory. W.P. Merck, sworn for the state in rebuttal. I have been a motorman for about 3 years, in the employ of the Georgia Railway and Electric Company. I know Daisy Hopkins. I have met her at the corner of Whitehall and Alabama between 2:30 and 3:30 on a Saturday. She said she was going to pencil factory. I made an engagement with her to go to her room to see her that Saturday. I was in a room with her at the corner of Walker and Peter Saint about 6:30 o'clock. She told me she had been to the pencil factory that afternoon. Her general character for truth and veracity is bad. I would not believe her on oath. George Gordon, sworn for the state in rebuttal. I am a practicing lawyer. I was at police station part of the time when Manola McKnight was making her statement. I was outside of the door most of the time. I went down there with habeas corpus proceedings to have her sign the affidavit, and when I got there, the detectives informed me that she was in the room, and I sat down and waited outside for her 2 hours, and people went in and out of the door, and after I had waited there, I saw the stenographer of the recorder's court going into the room, and I decided I had better make a demand to go into the room, which I did, and I was then allowed to go into the room, and I found Mr. February reading over to her some stenographic statement he had taken. There were two other men from Beck and Gregg Hardware Store, and Pat Campbell and Mr. Starnes, and Albert McKnight. After that was read, Mr. February went out to write it off on the typewriter, and while he was out, Mr. Starnes said, "Now this must be kept very quiet, and nobody be told anything about this." I thought it was agreed that we would say nothing about it. I was surprised when I saw it in the newspapers 2 or 3 days afterwards. I said to Starnes, "There is no reason why you should hold this woman. You should let her go." He said he would do nothing without consulting Mr. Dorsey, and he suggested that I had better go to Mr. Dorsey's office. I went to his office, and he called up Mr. Starnes, and then I went back to the police station and told Starnes to call Mr. Dorsey, and I presume that he did. Dorsey told him to let her go. Anyway, he said she could go. You, Mr. Dorsey, said you would let her go also. That morning you had said you would not unless I took out a habeas corpus. In the morning after Chief Beavers told me he would not let her go on bond, and unless you, Mr. Dorsey, would let her go, I went to your office and told you that she was being held illegally, and you admitted it to me, and I said we would give bond in any sum that you might ask. You said,